we'll forget.
So this Shabbos is Rosh Hashanah Shechalias for Shabbos. And as everybody knows, we're not blowing Shofar on Shabbos because there are so many Avirin and Avram Rishpishas Aravim. But if you actually look at the Mishnah that talks about Rosh Hashanah Shechalias for Shabbos, Yom Tov Shal Rosh Hashanah Shechal for Shabbos, the beginning of the fourth paragraph of Masechet Rosh Hashanah, we've all probably seen it at some point or another. It doesn't actually say that there's no Tkiya Shofar. What it says is, B'mikdash hayu taken avalei b'medina. They only blew shofar in the Beis HaMikdash. Rashi explains, because in the Beis HaMikdash, ain't shvus the Mikdash, they didn't have to make these gezeiros. So in the Beis HaMikdash they blew. But in the rest of the world they didn't blow. And then it says, Mishachar Beis HaMikdash, Hiskin Rabbi Yechim Ben Zakkai, Shehu Teikam Ucham Ucham Sheish Be Beis HaMikdash. That it's not just in the Beis HaMikdash. He said, we want to, there's no more Beis HaMikdash, we want to perpetuate it. Somehow, so he said, in the Mokam Beis Din, they should blow. Rav Elazar said, no, only in Yavne, and Amru Loi, Echa Yavne, Echa Komach Mashiach Bei Beis Din. So that's the end of the mission, and there's a piece of Gemara on that, but the Gemara seems to, you know, remain with that idea that there is a, there's supposed to be a Tekir Shofar, even nowadays, even after the times of the Beis HaMikdash, after the times of the Mishnah. You don't blow in every shul, you don't blow in every house, you blow in the Beis Din. So, okay, you know, maybe in Garden City there's no Beis Din, no Beis Din Kavua, so here you wouldn't blow. But in the five towns, I'm sure there's a Beis Din.
There isn't.
No? There's no Beis Din in the five towns? Okay. In Lakewood, in Muncie, in Borough Park, these places. Okay. So, what happened to this Tekiah Shofar in Beis Din? We all, you know, we don't blow at all. So the simple answer is, because the Rambam writes that this Beis Din that Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai was Mesakan, they should blow, means Dafka, a Beis Din of Smuchim. It has to be a Beis Din of people that have Smicha. We've talked about it a number of times over the years. Smicha, we use the term nowadays, but the Smicha that we have nowadays is not the real Smicha. When Chazal talks about Smicha, it means the smicha that was an unbroken chain going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, and it was passed down Dafka and Eretz Yisrael, and it remained for a couple of thousand years, but in approximately the 4th century of the Common Era.
End of the Tanoim, right?
A little bit past the Tanoim, into the times of the Talmud, right? It's interesting, in the times of Talmud Bavli, they were still saying that we here in Babel don't have smicha, but in Eretz Yisrael they have smicha. The Gemara of Avakama says that chatzi nezek is a knas. For knasos, you need a real Beis Din of smuchim. So if somebody's shar gores your shar, don't take them to the local Beis Din, tell them that they should come and do to Eretz Yisrael. Because over there they can adjudicate such cases, but here in Babel we can't. Because in Eretz Yisrael they had smicha. In Babel they did. I think I may have mentioned here at some point that if you read Gemara carefully, you'll notice that the names of the Amoraim that lived in Eretz Yisrael are called Rabbi, their name, Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Asi, Rabbi Yochanan, while the Amoraim that lived in Bavel were Rav Chista, Rav Huna, Rav Papa. Because in Bavel they didn't have smicha, so they didn't use the term Rabbi. So they called it Rav, like a lower level of rabbi. But in Eretz Yisrael they really had smicha. So that was true for at least the beginning of the times of the Amoraim. We know the Talmud Yerushalmi was completed earlier than the Talmud Bavli, not just because they were more precocious and, you know, were faster at finishing it up. It's because the communion in Israel didn't last as long as the communion in Babel. And then somewhere in the middle of the 4th century, they really were dissipating. That, you know, there were very few people left. One of the last ones was the famous Hillel HaKatan, who set up our calendar. The reason why he set up our calendar is because he saw that the smicha, you need smuchim to be Mekadosh HaKadosh, and the smicha is not going to last too much longer. Some say that he was the last samuch. Others say not that he was necessarily the last one, but he foresaw that it's not going to go too much longer. And around then, the smicha disappeared. So the Rambam...
That's not the hill from Beis Hillel.
No. It's a much later hill. Right, it's a much later hill. So the Rambam, you know, who's writing in the 12th century of the Common Era, so this is about 800 or 900 years later, so there hasn't been any smuchim for a very long time. The Rambam says that, actually, he doesn't say so nowadays we don't blow shofar, but he says that this, the Rambam was mistaken to blow shofar in Beis Din, it means a Beis Din of smuchim. And so, for us reading the Rambam, we would say, okay, so that means we're not blowing shofar in Muncie this Shabbos because we don't have smuchim nowadays. It's only based on a smuchim. There's a very interesting thing, though, in the Rif. If you take a look at the Rif, you know, the Rif brings down the Gemara. That's what he usually does. He brings down what it says in the Gemara. So on this halacha that the Mishnah said, that Re'echem Mitzak was Mitzak and Kolbakum Sheish by Beis, and we blow the shofar on Shabbos, Amrav Papa, what's the word? I think Ve'im Beisden. Rav Papa said, but only with the Beisden. And the Gemara says, my Ve'im Beisden, what does he mean by that? It means Lefnei Beisden, that you have to be in front of the Beisden, meaning, let's say, if the Beisden, you know, has, you know, has a particular building on you know, on the 9 in Lakewood, so over there, you blow shofar. All the other shuls in Lakewood can't blow shofar. You have to come to the Beisden. That's what Rav Papa says in the Gemara, and the Rif brings that down.
What is really the reason in the Mishnah that having a Beis Din says it's okay? Is it because they know the Aloch and they're gonna make sure you don't carry it?
I think so. I think that over there we don't have to worry about the Shemiyah B'Rem. Oh. They'll supervise.
Isn't the reason that because we don't love shofar is because we're afraid that we might have a question on the Tchias and then he would carry it? Or would a person would carry the shofar to go from shul to shul?
No, it's because somebody would... What the Gemara actually says is that a person might carry the shofar to someone to teach him how to blow. Mm-hmm. Which sounds like that's not the way we would have thought of that. Even if we were going to make the gzera, that's not the way we would have thought to say it. But that's
we don't carry a sefer Torah to the next shul because we need somebody to teach us to lay.
It's a good child. Why is there more of a gzera? First, we'll talk about that.
Why
by shofar yes and by kriyas haTorah not?
It's every week.
Yeah.
It's every week.
Okay. So Rav Papa says it has to be in front of the Beis Din. And the Rif brings that down. Now, there wouldn't seem to be anything remarkable about that. It's a piece of Gemara. There's no machlokes about it. It's accepted. L'halach. So, of course, yeah, why not bring it down? But the Baal Amar, who's always catching the Rif on, you know, whatever the Rif to catch him on, that's his whole sefer to point out places where he thinks that the Rif said something wrong. So the Baal Amar chaps him over here. He says, what are you bringing this down for? Your sefer, the whole purpose of your sefer is, you know, here there's a Talmud Bavli. You went and wrote a sefer, in which almost all the words are straight out of the Talmud Bavli. What was the whole purpose of your sefer? To separate those parts that are halacha l'maisa from those parts that are not halacha l'maisa. To make it easier for people to know the halacha, you wrote a sefer that brings down just those parts of the Talmud Bavli that are negeila halacha. So you told us exactly where to blow shofar on Shabbos on Madison Avenue on the 9, yes, but on Squankum you don't blow shofar. What do you mean? We don't have smuchim nowadays. So just like you don't bring down the halachas of karbanos because we don't have karbanos nowadays, you shouldn't have brought down this halacha either because we don't have smuchim nowadays. Right? The Rif was just a little bit before the Rambam, a good 700, 800 years. After there was no more smicha, what are you bringing down the details about where yes to blow and where not to blow? We don't blow at all nowadays. So Zuck the Ramban, says the Ramban who wrote a rebuttal to the Baal Amar called Mohammed Hashem, so Ramban says that actually you made a very nice diuk here in the Rif, but instead of slugging off and saying he made a mistake, why don't you figure out what it implies? The diuk is that the Rif argues with that Ramban and holds that you don't need smuchim. And no, when Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai said, Kol Makom Sheish by Beis Din, we blow, Beis Din means a Beis Din. Anybody that the local Jewish community calls a Beis Din, that could be called a Beis Din.
No matter if there's 10 Beis Dins in the town.
So in the Ramban, I don't think he differentiates, but you'll see in a moment that, it's much more limited than that. But the Ramban says that you're correct in noticing that it's like it's noteworthy that the Rif wrote this down, but the takeaway is not that the Rif wasn't being careful. The takeaway is that the Rif holds you don't need smuchim.
Yeah, but shouldn't we all die on him in a Beis Din, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, true.
Okay. That's true. That's a good point. So we need to clarify a little bit just in a moment. But first, I'll tell you what the Ramban says is, and in fact, the Rif practiced what he preached. And the Rif, in his Beis Din, they blew shofar on Shabbos. Mm. the Rif was, you know, not even so long ago, in the 1000s. But like the Ramban, that we know this from the writings of his Talmidim, that in his Beis Din, they blew shofar on Shabbos because he understood, it says in the Mishnah, that in the Beis Hamikdash they blew. I mean, Shachar Beis Hamikdash, Rabbi Yechim, Azak, Vasakin, in a Beis Din they should blow. And the Rif said, okay, so we're a Beis Din, we blow shofar on Shabbos. Now, the Rush also brings us down that, again, that they had a Messiah from the Talmidim of the Rif, that the Rif did that. But the Rush adds a very important qualifier. It's not that the Rif held so just any old Beis Din could blow. The Rif held you don't need smuchim. But the Rif held you know what you need? You need that it should be the Beis Din Hamuflog Shavadar. It has to be the preeminent Beis Din. So no, not every Dar Beis Din for sure. And not even all 10 Batei Dinim in Mansur Lakewood, right? If you have, right? But it's the preeminent Beis Din of the Dar.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Rosh says, and we have a Messiah that the Rif blew shofar in his Beis Din. So now that becomes a much more interesting story.
To get everyone to agree to that. Oh,
so you know, have many mufflers. I just recently read that there's a maisa that one time, I don't know what the context was, it didn't say over here what the context was, but one time there was a meeting, this is in the 20th century, there was a meeting of Rabbanim and Eretz Yisrael, and Rabbi Chaim Tukachinsky was speaking, and he said that, you know, he was expressing his frustration that they couldn't all get along and they couldn't all, and he said, I guarantee that if somebody else could get all of the Rabbanim to be in Ba'achas with each other, I'll bring Mashiach, I take it on my achrayus, I'll bring you Mashiach tomorrow. Rabbi Eliezer Yudel Finkel got up and he said, maybe we could trade jobs, you took the easy half. That was the story. So the so this, you know, idea of Beis Din Mufluk Shavadar, you know, does make it seem a little bit impractical. But look, with the Rif,
that would be the only one place in the world would blow.
So nowadays the Chayyim should mean one place in the world. Now it's a little bit interesting. Now this story about the Rif, again in the Rif's Beis Din they did this. We have from his Talmidim, but the Rush writes that because he held you don't need smuchim, all you need is the Beis Din Mufluk Shavadar, and obviously then he believed that he was the Beis Din Mufluk Shavadar. So I think it's worthwhile to just point out something about the world at that time. This was in the 1000s. In the 1000s, so I think the Jewish world, there were really two worlds. The what we call the Svardim, which wasn't limited to Svard, but Spain, North Africa, what it really meant was those Jews that were living under Muslim control. And there was the Ashkenazim, which were in France, Germany, and England at that time primarily, and it meant the Jews that were living under Christian control. And these were two worlds. Before the Crusades, the Christian and Muslim worlds were very, very cut off from each other, and they really didn't know much about one another. The Rif was unquestionably the undisputed Gadol Hadar among the Sfaradim. At the exact same time, you had Rashi, who was unquestionably the undisputed Gadol Hadar among the Ashkenazim. The two of them, though, they probably never heard of each other. It's quite likely that they just were not aware of one another's existence. I don't know that for a fact.
Isn't there Rashi on the Rif?
So in the back of your Gemara, there is Rashi on the Rif, but that's a misnomer. Rashi never wrote on the Rif. Rashi wrote on the Talmud Bavli, and he wrote more. So there was his final draft is what was printed, the original, when they printed the Talmud Bavli, they put what was considered the most authoritative version of the Pirush Rashi. And then a short time later, a printer got a hold of another edition of Rashi, which is largely the same but has some differences. It's presumed that it's probably an earlier edition of Adur Kam of Rashi, and he wanted to do something with it. So he was printing a Rif. The Rif, the Maisa, has most of the same words as the Talmud Bavli. So he put it on the Rif. And that's what it's called. It's called Rashi al Rif. But it really means the Rashi that lives next door to the Rif. But it's not. It's
and
not
they
a
never even met each other. It's amazing.
They never met each other. And again, I'm pretty sure that there's no indication anywhere in their writings or in the writings of the Talmidim that they were aware of each other. Obviously, I can't say for sure that there weren't, but I don't think there's any indication that they were. So, you know, when we say that the Rif considered his Beis Din to be the Beis Din of Shavadar, Lav Davki, he meant to be making a statement, we're bigger than the Ashkenazim, my Beis Din is more chashal than Rashi's Beis Din, because it could be they just didn't know about each other. But certainly in the world that he knew, which was the Tsar of the world, yeah, he was the recognized Gadol Hadar and Poisek Hadar, so he held that in his base, and we blow Shofar.
So they didn't do business at all across those lines?
I don't think so. I think that was all. That was one of the effects of the Crusades. When you go check your high school notes, I think one of the major effects of the Crusades is supposed to be the cultural diffusion, right? That even though it was a war, but it brought them into contact with each other. So then that opened commerce opportunities, and you know, people they learned about one another, and they shared chachma with one another and culture with one another. But before the Crusades, it was. Really two worlds.
The word Ashkenaz is really embracious, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I don't know what you're referring to, but...
One of the sons of Yafet, or grandsons. Right? Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, no, we I think we once had a shir about that. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, we once had a shir about the Ashkenaz and Svard that's talked about in Tanakh, how that relates to... Okay, I guess it's long ago enough that we could do it again. That's good to know. So we have this really remarkable story that the Rush brings down, the Rush and the Ramban both, they bring down then the Rif's based in Beirut Shofar on Shabbos. And again, with the Rush is this detail about how you held that you need the base of Mufluk Shabbadar, so that makes a little bit of a more juicy story. But I'll go on and be that as may in the Rift's basin, and they did it. But the Rambam argues and the Balamar argues, right? Because the Rift is kind of a Das Yachid. Even the Ramban, who defends the Rift, he says to the Ramban, says back to the Balamar, no, he didn't make a mistake. That was his shita. He held it. You don't need smuchim. But the Ramban doesn't say that. I don't think the Ramban agrees with him. La halacha lemaisa. He just says that's the Rift's shita, and we heard from his Talmidim that he in fact acted upon that shita. But la halacha, the consensus of the majority of Rishayim is that you don't need smuchim, and the Rambam says that you don't need smuchim. Other way around. I mean, the consensus of the majority of Rishayim is that you do need smuchim, and the Rambam says that you do need smuchim. So halacha l'maitza, that's enough to explain why nowadays we don't have an etkiyah shofar on Shabbos. Yeah, the Mishnah says kol hakum sheyesh bei beisim, but it means beisim smuchim. We don't have smuchim nowadays. There's even a Rashi that's mashma a step further than the Rambam. In Rashi, it's mashma that the basin that Rabbi Yechim Zaka was talking about was dafka, a basin of Chof Gimel, 23 Dayanim, what we call a Sanhedri Kitana. And then it goes without saying that that would mean that he needs smuchim. I mean, there's no significance to the number 23 unless you're talking about Sanhedrins. So obviously Rashi holds like the Rambam, but even more than the Rambam, they need 23 smuchim. So those are the three shitas. You have the Rif, that's the smallest requirement. You don't need smuchim, all you need is a base of Mufluk Shabbadar. But like we were just observing before, even that might be enough to make it impractical nowadays. But anyway, we don't pass like the Rif because you have the Rambam that needed even more, you need smuchim, and you have Rashi that needed 23 and they should all be smuchim. So nowadays we can't have tekiyah shofar from Shabbos. But in the year 1881, Rosh Hashanah fell on a child. 1880, I think, I should say. Yeah, it was Rosh Hashanah, Tuf Resh Mem Aleph. That was still in 1880. In the year Tuf Resh Mem Aleph, Rosh Hashanah fell on a Shabbos. And there was a significant movement in Yerushalayim to blow shofar on Shabbos. The movement was led by... The movement was led by one of the respected Rabbanim of Yerushalayim, whose name was Rabbi Kiva Yosef Schlesinger, who was a maverick in a lot of ways. He had a lot of interesting shitas that sometimes, you know, got other people upset with him on a variety of things. He can't really be categorized. He doesn't fit neatly into a box. He was a maverick. He had a lot of interesting shitas about different things. But you know, like in terms of, let's say, you know, right and, you know, right wing and left wing, he, on the one hand, was much more, I think, mukuriv to the Zionist ideal than most of the very right wing Rabbanim. On the other hand, he had very extreme shittas about, you know, not being Mishana, the loss of the Lavush and the Lashon and the names and, you know, so very, very strongly against Yidden that adopt dress from the Goyim or names from the Goyim.
Where did he come from?
He was Hungarian.
Hungarian.
He was Hungarian. He came there to Israel at some point, to Yerushalayim. At some point, I don't know how old he was. And he had, he proposed, so this was in the year Tafresh Mem, I guess, when he started making this tumult about it for the upcoming Rosh Hashanah, that this year in Yerushalayim, we should blow Shofar on Shabbos. Now, based on this Mishnah that the Mikdash are taken, and the Shechor Beis Mikdash is going to be Echem Azaka, they should be taken, B'chav Mishayish by Beisin, and we should blow here in Yerushalayim. Now, how is he going to get around all the halachas that we just talked about, that he needs smicha? We don't have smicha nowadays. He certainly wasn't under the illusion that we had smicha nowadays. So his main chiddush was as follows. He said, you know, if you look in the Rishonim on the Sugya, Tosfos and the Ran, they both ask that there's really two Mishnayos in Shas that are very similar to each other. There was this Mishnah that we started that Rishonim Shachalis B'Shabbos, the Mikdash are you taken, Avolei B'Medina. There's another Mishnah, Masechta Sukkah, that says Chag HaSukkah Shachal B'Shabbos, Yom Tov Shal Sukkah Shachal B'Shabbos, B'Mikdash Hayu Noitlim Avolei B'Medina. They would take the lulav in the Beis HaMikdash and not outside the Beis HaMikdash. So you have these two mitzvahs that they only did in the Beis HaMikdash and they didn't do anywhere in the world, anywhere else in the world. Then the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So, sorry.
Unplug it?
No.
I got it. Okay. Then the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Zakkai made a takana that we were blowing the shofar on Shabbos and the Beis HaMikdash should be perpetuated, should be continued elsewhere. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash, but let's do it in the Beis Din. Why do we find the same takana regarding Tehillas Lulav? We don't find that Rabbi Yechon Zaka was misakein that they should take a lula b'chol makom sheyesh beis din. But mikdash hayu noitlin, then the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So for Falun, we don't take a lulav anymore. But by shofar, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So Rabbi Yechon Zaka said, so let's find somewhere else. So Tezan and the Ran, they both answer because shofar is in
one person. One shofar.
Okay, I hear. Maybe it's a nice terrace.
Amona, I'm bringing, carrying love in one Shabbos.
It's more likely to lead to lead to Itzah. I hear. That's a nice terrace, but that's not what they say. That's what that but the Ran and Tesis, you know.
It's all about the strict.
Could it be that there is another
terrace?
I don't remember now. The Tosfos has two turrets in. Maybe that's I don't think so. I hear it's a nice Sahara. But Lamais, what the Tosfos and the Ram both say is that the reason he made this takana for the Shofar is because Shofar is indispensable. You can't have a Shana without a Shofar. The Shofar is the Halizach name for Yisrael Avim Shemayim. It's the Yom Hadin. You need the Shofar. No Shofar, what's going to be? So the Halizach name for Yisrael Avim Shemayim. So Be'echem Mezakeh was Mesakein. So if we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, we'll take it somewhere else. Lulav, it's a nice mitzvah, but it's one of many mitzvahs. If you can't do the mitzvah this year, so you won't do the mitzvah this year. It's Nishka Farlach. But the Shofar is really Gefarlach. That's how Tosfos and the Ram both answer the question. Rabbi Yechon Zaka made this takana because he couldn't imagine a Shana without a Tekiyah Shofar. So Rabbi Yitzchak Schlesinger says, so if that's what was motivating them, so that him, Rabbi Yechon Zaka, that's what was motivating Rabbi Yechon Zaka, it seems he did a pretty lousy job. Because he said, oh no, we can't have that, there shouldn't be any Tekiyah Shofar. Let's make Tekiyah Shofar in a basin of Smuchim. And a couple of centuries later, there was no more smicha. So, what happened to Rabbi Yechon Zaka's takana? So he said that he's convinced the ikur takana of Rabbi Yechon Zaka was, like the Rishonim say, you can't have Rosh Hashanah without Tekiyah Shofar. So there's got to be a Tekiyah Shofar somewhere in the world. So he was Mesakein Beis Din, and the Rambam, the Rambam's correct. The Rambam understood that he meant a Beis Din of Smuchim. But I'm sure Rav Schlesinger said, he meant the Beis Din Smuchim because in his time there was smicha. So he wanted to limit it, and, you know, it shouldn't be a hefker belt just everywhere. So he said, only do it when there's smuchim. That's what he meant. He meant the Beis Din Smuchim. But Avada, that's only lechatchila. If you have smuchim, then the Beis Din Smuchim. Rashi, who limited even more, Dafka Beis Din of 23, that's because you had it, if you have it, so you should do that. But, of course, Rabbi Yechim Zaka would agree that if there comes a time that there's no more Sanhedrin Ketana, there's no more Smuchim at all, then what do you do? Then you blow it without Smuchim. You have to blow it somewhere, because that was the whole point. That's why he made the Tikkun in the first place. You can't allow the mitzvah to disappear.
From the time of Rashi, there was 23?
No, but Rashi was explaining. Rashi wasn't saying what to do. He was just explaining the Mishnah. So he said that he believes that whatever conditions we find in the Rishonim that would limit our ability to blow shofar, we're only meant lechatchila. If you have it, but it wasn't meant to be ma'akev, because the most important thing is that there should be a tkiyah shofar every Rosh Hashanah somewhere in the world. So now it's a tremendous chiddush. The most obvious reason why it's a tremendous chiddush, the most obvious objection to it is because, you know, this is the 1880s, and he came up with this new idea. Nobody's blown shofar in a shul since the Rif in the 1000s. The Rif died in the year 1103. Mm. So this is, 700 and something years, and nobody's blown shofar, and nobody thought of this. Okay, that's a stark attack against Rif Schlesinger, but like I said, he was a maverick. He was not afraid to introduce new things. But he also had an additional argument. He said, There's another argument that I could offer that makes a little bit more, miyuchad for the current circumstances, and takes away a little bit the kasha of, well, if this is right, so how come the Rambam didn't blow? How come the Rashba didn't blow? How come the Shach and the Taz and Rabbi Kivager didn't blow? So he said, let me tell you my second argument. In the Mishnah, it said that b'mikdash you take an avalei b'medina, and then it says b'mikdash has given rechem and zakai should take a mechamal b'mikdash b'beisin. So we've been focusing on the second half of the Mishnah. Rechem and zakai is takana. Do we qualify for that takana? Do we not qualify for that takana? The pashas of the Rishonim was that we don't qualify for that takana. I wanted to say a chiddush that no, maybe really we do, because all the requirements are not ma'akev b'di'evet. Okay, but that's as far as the safe of the Mishnah. Rechem and zakai is takana. But what about the ratio of the Mishnah? That b'mikdash are you taken? That was before Rabbi Yechim and Zakeh's takana. There was a din that you blow in the mikdash. Now, how do we define mikdash for this purpose? So there's a very well-known machlokes Rashi and the Rambam, which I think we have talked about before, that Rashi holds that b'mikdash means in the base of mikdash. The Rambam learns that b'mikdash means in the Ir HaKodesh. Mikdash means Yerushalayim. According to the Rambam, the din that b'mikdash hayu taken was in the whole Yerushalayim. It wasn't just in the base of mikdash doing the avodah. It was in the whole Yerushalayim. They blew. Meikar din before Rabbi Yechim and Zakeh's takana. Zoktav Kivi Yisrael Schlesinger. So the Rambam and the Rashba and the Rosh and the Shach and the Taz and all the Gedolei Rishonim and Achronim, they were living in Yerushalayim. So they zichr didn't have that halacha. They had Rabbi Yechim and Zakeh's takana. Okay, they felt that you're not going to without smicha, they're not going to blow. But we're in Yerushalayim, and this is a fairly new phenomenon, at least for the Ashkenazim it was. I mean, the truth is that the Sfaradim had already been in Yerushalayim for about 300 years, but the Ashkenazim mamish only came to Yerushalayim in the 1800s. There were no Ashkenazim in Yerushalayim before that ever. So he says, so don't ask me kasha from the Friya de Gedeiris. The Friya de Gedeiris weren't here.
The Sfarad, well, 7 years before, 8 years before, when it was Shabbos.
Yeah, no. The Sfaradim had been there for 300 years.
So were they blowing on Shabbos?
No, they definitely were not. They were
so
not.
So he wants to take the Rif, who was a Sfarad, and use his Shita to blow?
No, he's not really relying on the Rif. I mean, the Rif
he wasn't relying on the Rif.
It was Zonchev.
No, right. He started off the Rif. According to the Rif, we could for sure. Well, according to the Rif, he still had the base of Muflik Shavu Dura to contend with. But okay, I guess he felt that we here in Yerushalayim, who's bigger than us here in Yerushalayim? Okay. Then there was the Smicha problem, right? So that was the previous discussion. He wanted to say it's only Lechatchila. But then he wanted to say that the Rambam teaches that B'mikdash means in Yerushalayim. So in Yerushalayim, you don't have to come on to Rabbi Yechonon Zakkai's takana. We're not blowing here because Rabbi Yechonon Zakkai was masakin kol makom sheish be'beis din, and then we have to decide, do we count as a beis din, do we not count as a beis din? We're still in the reish of the Mishnah. This is the Mikdash. We're in the Mikdash. The Mikdash means Yerushalayim. The Mikdash are you taken? We're still in the Mikdash. So let's be tekeya. And on that, nobody ever set a requirement of smuchim. You don't need smuchim. You just need to be in Yerushalayim. And we're in Yerushalayim. So he says there's two dinim. There's a din of blowing al Yerushalayim. Now this one also, again, it's not possible to rely on this for sure, because according to Rashi, the Mikdash meant the base of Mikdash. So you have to, you know, choose one side in that Malchus Rishonim. But he's using it to, you know, as a sniff. He wants to cobble together a few different things to rely on. So he said you have one din of Mikdash, which according to the Rambam, we qualify for the din of Mikdash. Okay, not according to Rashi, but according to the Rambam, we can be saying about that. Yeah, then you have another din of Beis Din, which admittedly the Rishonim said not like me, but I want to suggest that maybe they only meant that lechatchila, so maybe we could qualify for the din of Beis Din. Both of them are debatable for sure, but when you put the two of them together, there's a strong case that can be made that at least we here in Yerushalayim, with a bunch of chashav rabbanim, and we're in Yerushalayim, we could blow, call it off the din of Beis Din, call it off the din of Yerushalayim, take your pick, or put the two of them together. There's enough of a basis for us to blow.
You have the Shemi Avirenu question, because you're allowed to carry, no? With a...
Well, I mean, if it's surrounded by a wall, then yeah, you're allowed to carry if you make an Eruv. But that's not going to take away the problem. I mean, in the five towns also you have an Eruv. But Chazal made a takana that you're not allowed to blow because Shemi Avirenu, because somebody who... If we blow on the Shabbos and somebody who is in a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim or in a place where the Shabbos might come to blow, so all over they said you're not allowed to blow. But he's saying that all over was never said to Yerushalayim. They never made that takana for Yerushalayim. So in Yerushalayim, you're still left with the mitzvah d'oraisa. It says in the Torah to blow. The Chum came along and said not to blow, but they didn't say, but according to the Rambam, the Taich of Mikdash, they never said that for Yerushalayim. So we're in Yerushalayim, so we should still blow. Mm-hmm. So there were two arguments. Again, the way I see it, the second one is more, you know, more compelling than the first. But he has these two arguments that he presented to say that we should blow. And then he added a third one. The third one was by far the most creative, and maybe, you know, people didn't take it so seriously. But he said, look, you know, I'm just adding on another possibility. He said there's this is a little funny. There's a Gemara in what's it? Tanis Daf Yudalin. The Gemara says that in an Eis Tzara you're taking a filu b'Shabbos. The Gemara talks about how if there's goyim are besieging the city, or there's a shipwreck, so there's a real emergency, so you could call out to Hashem even with a tekiya. On Shabbos, it says, and there's no gezeirah shem yavirenu on that. That's on the mitzvah of Shofar, but you know, Shofar of Rosh Hashanah. But to blow in an Eis Tzara, there's no gezeirah shem yavirenu on that. Nobody ever asked for that on Shabbos. You're allowed to do that on Shabbos. He said, so, okay, do we have it so good nowadays here in Yerushalayim? Mm-hmm. There are Arabs around us, there's always a sakana that there's no parnasa, people are almost starving. It's an Eis Tzara. So, dal mehacha the Rosh Hashanah. Make believe it wasn't Rosh Hashanah. Make believe it was the Goyish of New Year's. If I told you we could blow on Shabbos, yeah, there's a heter for that, because the Gemara says that for an Eis Tzara, you're taking a piece of Shabbos. So if you don't like my first argument, you don't like my second argument, just make believe it's not Rosh Hashanah and come to my shul and we'll blow Shofar. I'm giving you something.
There was never Eis Tzara told them, that you still have that cash also.
Yeah, he surely would never would have said to rely on that all by itself.
He just
but as an added sniff, you know, then now there's three things to rely on, and even if each one of the three is shaky, but he felt that if he put all the three together, there's already a very strong.
So did you do it? Did you go to shul?
Did he
write a sefer, by the way?
Yeah, he wrote a sefer. I don't know if he wrote a sefer. Or if he just went around telling people. I didn't see anything in a primary source. I saw this brought down in the Sefer of Bechimlech Tukashinsky. He talks about all in Yane. He has a three-volume set called Ir HaKodesh VaHamikdash. So it's all in Yane Yerushalayim and the Mikdash. So he devotes a chapter to this episode, and he brings down the arguments of Rav Kivi Yosef Schlesinger. And then, what's very interesting is he brings down some recollections. He wasn't there at the time. He wasn't, I don't even know, was he, I think he was born. I don't really know the years of his life. I'm pretty sure he was born already, but maybe he was a young man. It was probably before he came to Yerushalayim, but he brings down recollections that he heard from others. He brings the following two things. So he heard from the Rav of Yerushalayim at that time was Rav Shmuel Salant. Now, what's that? One thing's for sure. Rav Schlesinger did not win over the Rabbanim. He was, you know, it was his idea, and it was, people thought of it as, you know, he was respected and his words were taken seriously, but like I said, he was a little bit of a maverick, and this was Rav Schlesinger's crazy idea. And the other Rabbanim didn't endorse it. Whether or not he actually did it, I think there's different. I've seen different versions of the story. I don't know. I don't know if there's a way to track down what actually happened. I've seen it written that he didn't get anybody's support and he didn't end up implementing it. And I saw somewhere else that first year, that first time that it came in Tafresh Mem Aleph, he actually did it, but without much participation, and then he didn't continue afterwards. Definitely, it wasn't Niskavel. Whether he actually did it privately or, you know, for himself one time is unknown. But Rav Chaim Tukashinsky says that he heard from an Ish Neman, the B'shem Shmuel Salant. So he says somebody who was in Yerushalayim at that time and was close to Shmuel Salant said that he heard from Shmuel that he's not. If anyone asks him, should I go? I would say no. I'm not endorsing this. But if somebody tells me he's going, I wouldn't stop him. It was sort of like a non-committal, somewhat ambivalent, not exactly not endorsing, but not condemning either. Like I could hear the basis for it, and I'm not going to tell anybody not to go. But if you ask me what I think you should do, I would say no. But I wouldn't make a macha. That was the shmua. Mm-hmm. Now this Rav Tukashinsky, he was married to a granddaughter of Shmuel Salant, and in his later years, and Shmuel's later years, Shmuel Salant lived to over 100, and Rav Tukashinsky had a close shaykhus with him, and he writes in this sefer that he doesn't know why he never asked him about it. This is such a fascinating subject, and he heard this shmua. He never actually asked him, so he doesn't know this firsthand, but he says he heard this from an Ish Neman. The second mice, and he said, this mice I have firsthand. This is in the year 1904. So Rosh Hashanah of Tafresh Samachay was also going to be Rosh Hashanah Shechal B'Shabbos. Now, if you jump ahead about 6 months, in Adar of Tafresh Samachay, The Aderes was the Rav of Yerushalayim after Rav Shmuel Salant. Shmuel Salant, like I said, he lived to over 100. So at a certain point, when he was very old, Rav Elazar David Rabinowitz Tumim was hired to be his assistant. The assistant head rabbi of Yerushalayim, known as the Aderes. And then he took over as the chief rabbi after Shmuel Salant passed away. And I think he passed away only a couple of years later. So he passed away in the year Tafresh Samachay. Prior to Rosh Hashanah of Tafresh Samachay, so Rav Shmuel Salant said, I had a very interesting story with him. I went to him, Rav Yechimach Tukachinsky. What he's best known for, by the way, is that he every year made the Luach of the year, which was then spread all over the world, the Ezra's Torah Luach, you still see sometimes hanging in many shuls. That's a continuation of his project.
Those big
ones, right? Those start. I mean, I don't know what the size of the paper was in his day, but that's a continuation of his project. Of Chaim Tukashinsky, made the luach that would go through all the details that are going to come up in shul over the next year and what you're supposed to do.
He had the earliest breakfasting's man, I think, also.
Did he? Okay.
He gives to his man.
Okay. Well, Amai Zmanim, it mentions his name.
I think so.
Okay. Okay. So he writes that he came before, shortly before Shoshana of that year, he came to the Aderes to show him his calendar, to maybe to go over some things with him. And the first thing that you see when you look at the calendar is that this coming Rosh Hashanah, this was during El, this upcoming Rosh Hashanah, was Rosh Hashanah Shechal v'Shabbos. And he said, the Aderes made a comment. He said, it's unfortunate that this year falls out on Shabbos. I don't know if I'm ever going to hear Kirill Schaefer Deiraitse again. Mm. Now, obviously, he had a strong premonition that this was going to be his last Rosh Hashanah. And this Rosh Hashanah, there's no Schaefer Deiraitse. I mean, we have 2 days, but the second day is not Deiraitse. So when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, there's no Schaefer Deiraitse. So he said that Aderes said that, you know, he felt he sighed. And you know, felt disturbed at the fact that I don't know if I'm ever going to get another culture of a day rights in my life. And then he said, if Rav Schlesinger was doing his thing, I would go sneak in the back and listen from behind the wall. That's what he said. That Rav Schlesinger was doing. You know, I'm not endorsing him. I'm not going to go and say people should go there. But if he was doing his thing, I wouldn't mind listening from the back.
It means like in a year like this, where he, for whatever reason, he had this premonition.
Right. He didn't do all the other
year before he wouldn't have gone.
The year before he wouldn't have gone. Right. But this year, because he felt this real agmas nefesh, he's never going to hear another Kol Schaefer. I would even go hear if Schlesinger's Kol Schaefer. Yeah.
After. Okay.
So those are the two ma'isim. But the ma'isa, the project was definitely not accepted, you know, by the mainstream rabbanim. What are the arguments against it? So, okay, obviously the first argument that he made is just very, you know, it's just some chodesh tech. I mean, the Rambam says that you need smuchim, and he says, yeah, but he only means l'chadchila. You know, if you don't have smuchim, then he would be okay without smuchim. That's very chiddush, right? We can understand why, even though we hear the logic to it, he said because, like, he brought that Ran, that the whole reason why Rabbi Yechim is not going is that there should be a Shefer somewhere in the world. Okay, that's a good argument, but still, he seems to be arguing against the Pashas of Rishonim. The second argument that he made, which seemed like the stronger Lomdisha one, that forget about the din of Rabbi Yechim and Zakeh Takana, let's blow off the din of Yushalayim. So Rav Tukachinsky writes that if you take a look in the Turi Evan, who came before them, obviously, the Turi Evan specifically says that it's not two dinim. The whole reason why they blew in Yerushalayim was because that's where the Sanhedrin was. Mm. So Rabbi Yehuda and Zaka was simply saying that we, now that Yerushalayim is destroyed, basically just destroyed, let's transfer that din to somewhere else. But it wasn't two different din, it was all else the din of Beis Din. And therefore, you know, so then Lefi Zeh, nowadays Yerushalayim without a Beis Din doesn't have the Cheshivas of Yerushalayim at all anymore. So that would be a counter argument to that second argument. And the third argument which we call the most creative one, that he said, Dalmei Halka, the whole din of Rosh Hashanah, why can't you just blow out the Eis Tzara? So Rav Tukachinsky says, I can't imagine what he was thinking when he said that, but if you look in the Gemara in Tanis, it says specifically that's not allowed with a Shofar. It says that taking a field with Shabbos means, but not with a Shofar. So I don't know what he was thinking with that. Okay, so those are the arguments against. Lemaisa wasn't Miskabel. But despite that, there's a very interesting shaila that would arise. And really, this last story that I mentioned with the Aderes touches upon this. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank talks at length about the question of, let's suppose he's wrong. And yeah, he's not supposed to blow. But he's blowing. He's doing it because he's a maverick, okay? So he's going to do it. Should I go and listen to it? Because, Chazal said, let's say Chazal said that it's also to blow Shofar on Shabbos, and I'm not going to, I don't want to violate the words of Chazal, I'm not going to do an Aveira, but here I'm not doing the Aveira. He's volunteering, I consider it an Aveira, but he's doing the Aveira for me. Now, all I'm doing is hearing a Shofar, so I'm getting the mitzvah. So I'm getting the mitzvah without the Aveira.
It's a mitzvah
above Aveira, but it's not through my Aveira.
It's somebody else's.
So
he's your shliach.
Are you getting the mitzvah?
To you. for doing it.
I hear. Okay, maybe. Although a mitzvah that, well, we already have a Yushalmi that says that a mitzvah that's done through a Chil Shabbos is not considered a mitzvah of Avadeira. I think Yushalmi's case was that if somebody tears Kriya on Shabbos, he's Yetzei Dei the Kriya because
if somebody steals a lulav and you borrow that lulav, you're not Yetzei with the mitzvah.
That's true. That's because they're the Avadeiras in the Chefta.
Yeah.
But by Malach on Shabbos, the Malach on Shabbos, the Avadeira is not in the Chefta. So Sifas Frank said that really what the shaila here is, the lumdus of this shaila is that Chazal said you don't blow shofar on Shabbos, which is really a very surprising thing to say, because the Torah said that you do blow shofar. The Torah said you blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah without discriminating between different days of the week. So when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos, there's a mitzvah say Jai Raisa to blow the shofar. The Rabbanu came along and said, no, we're afraid that's going to lead to carrying on Shabbos, so don't blow the shofar. So the Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Tzadi, describes this as Yesh Koyach B'yad Chachamim Lakar Dabam in HaTera. That this is an extraordinary Koyach. The Chacham can actually uproot something from the Torah. The Torah says yes to blow, and the Chacham come along and say not to blow. So what does it mean when we say that the Chacham have the Koyach to uproot a mitzvah in the Torah? Does that mean that they could literally uproot it, that now it's not a mitzvah in the Torah anymore? And if a guy goes and does it, he's not getting a mitzvah anymore because the Chacham said they uprooted it. It's no longer a mitzvah. Or maybe no. Maybe the Chachamim, with all their koyach, they don't have the koyach to change something from the Torah. If the Torah says it's a mitzvah, it remains a mitzvah. They could just ask for you to do it. And then, you know, Chazal gave us instructions that what do you do when there's a conflict? If the Torah says to do something, but Chazal say not to do it, So if anyone will go and blow a shofar or take a lulav, so even though, he's fulfilling what the Torah said and he'll get a mitzvah, but he's getting an aveira, and the aveira is much bigger than the mitzvah because that's what Chazal said, he's supposed to listen to them. So the aveira outweighs the mitzvah, and so there's no reason, you won't gain anything by doing it, but you do still have a mitzvah. You have a mitzvah, it's just not worth it because you're getting an aveira that's bigger. If you deherit that way, then if somebody else is doing the aveira for me, so I just get the mitzvah without the aveira, then it's a free mitzvah. Why not? I should surely do it. But if we learn that each koyach v'yacham lakadav in the Torah means not just that they could ask her to do it. The mitzvah is a mitzvah because that's what the Torah said, but we're asking you to do it. No, it means more than that. We can uproot the mitzvah from the Torah. We can make it into not a mitzvah. So then when you go and do it, you're not even getting a mitzvah. If that's the pshat, then there's no reason to go and listen.
Can you have a guy do it?
Have a guy do what?
Blow shofar.
You can't have that on any Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
Why?
Not Yotze.
Because it's not a kosher mitzvah. You can't have a chirush at the bakatan either. You need a bar chiyuva.
You need a bar chiyuva to do the blowing, right?
Right.
So then why should it be any better?
Because he's not a bar chiyuva.
Why should it be any better here?
Why isn't Rosh Lezinger a bar chiyuva?
No, because if the
Rabbanan said that it's no longer a mitzvah,
right,
you're not a bar chiyuv.
So how could it be yotze?
Right. On the tzad that they're oiker the mitzvah, then of course there's no mitzvah left and there's no reason to go listen. But on the tzad that they can't be oiker a mitzvah, they could just ask for the mitzvah. So then you could say
if they ask for the mitzvah, then nobody has a chiyuv.
On this side, we're saying that the Daraisa level remains true, but they're saying they're superimposing a Dindrabanon on top of that. They're saying that there is Midrabanon, we're saying you shouldn't do it, but the Torah still says you should, but you're supposed to listen to us. So then on a Daraisa level, you consider it a Bar Chiyuva, and it can be considered a Kosher Mitzvah. So he said that's what this Shaila is totally on. And a very interesting nafkamina that he brings, I don't think he comes to a bottom line, like he's befalpa a little bit about it, maybe he can say it like this, maybe he can say it like that, he talks about, this is the lumness of the shaila. But a very interesting nafkamina, he says, Rabbi Kiva Eger talked about a similar shaila, meaning a shaila that's totally on the same chakira, as follows. Let's say this is negated this year, because Hashanah falls on Shabbos, so Sukkot also is going to fall on Shabbos. Mm-hmm. Let's say a person gets up on the first morning of Sukkot and he takes a lulav. He didn't know that you don't take a lulav on Shabbos. He forgot from the last time it happened a few years ago. At Sukkot, he gets up in the morning in his own Sukkot, he takes the lulav. So he makes a bracha. And he makes a bracha of Shachianu v'kimanu v'gyanu l'zman hazeh. He takes the lulav. Then he gets to shul, he finds that. He says, hey, I got nobody else brought the lulav. Oh, my God. Okay. So he realizes he shouldn't have done that. Fine, now it's the next morning, and he's going to take the lulav again. Because he makes a Shachianu. Lulav, we only make Shachianu the first day. It's not like Shefer. Shefer, we make Shachianu both days. What?
Didn't have the mitzvah to do it.
So if what he did yesterday was not a mitzvah at all, so then he didn't do the mitzvah yet, so it is the first time he's doing the mitzvah. But if the Chacham can only aser it, but they can't make it stop being a mitzvah, what the Torah says remains va'ilam va'ed, the Chacham could say, don't do it. And it's an aveira to do it. But it's a key mitzvah also, it's a key mitzvah, but it's also an aveira. If you learn like that, so then he got the mitzvah ready yesterday, and he made his Shachianu, then he wouldn't make another Shachianu. So that's a real halachal mitzvah.
But the Shachianu is only on the Zman. That's only on the Zman. So the mitzvah of Netilas Lulav, he may have not been yoitzed, but the Zman, the Zman is the Zman.
No? No. Shachianu is on the, it's not the Shachianu they make on the Kedushas Hayoyim. Make two Shachianus on the Sukkot. One on the Kedushas Hayoyim and another one on the mitzvah Lulav.
So
it's just on the mitzvah.
Just on the mitzvah. Got it.
So Rabbi Yehuda's shaila really is, could the Chachamim uproot the mitzvah or could they just aser the mitzvah? So Rabbi Yehuda Frank says, so that's what we want to know over here. If they can uproot the mitzvah, then there's no reason to go listen. But if they could just aser the mitzvah, then maybe it's not a bad idea to go and listen. Now, the interesting thing is that, you know, you see, he was talking about this as a once upon a time scenario. Maybe in the year 1880, somebody blew a shofar on Shabbos, but nowadays nobody does, right? His view did not prevail, and nobody does this anymore. But, believe it or not, there is an argument I remember hearing said over once that somebody told me that he saw, I don't remember whose books this was from, but from Jewish ritual considerations of one of the other movements in Judaism that's not loyal to Shem Torah Mitzvahs, but they have their ritual considerations. So the following argument: Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. The sages said not to blow shofar, but the whole reason why they said not to blow shofar is because it might come to a malacha. But we anyway hold you allowed to do malacha. We rule. So I don't know if this is the conservative or the reform. Maybe it's both. That their official policy is that we blow shofar on Shabbos. Lemaisa, I think.
So
mamash, the same shaila arises, except
they're a kaifer.
Right, except that the big difference is that over here we would say chas v'shalom, the chil Hashem, definitely don't want to do anything that shows some kind of participation in the rituals of those Yidden that are not loyal Lashem lo teirasai. So lemaisa, we would never recommend or allow such a thing. But in theory, in lomd is the shaila is not a bad shaila. And I would say, so even practically, let's say, of course, you know, nobody's going to say you should go, but let's say you happen to live next door to their house, to their temple, and you're hearing it anyway. Should you have in mind to be Yitzhak? They're blowing this Shabbos. I didn't think of that. That's
what
was that? He said, should you make a bracha? But put that aside, but should you have in mind to be Yitzhak? Could it be that you're actually going to get a mitzvah? Maybe their curl is not a kosher mitzvah altogether because he's a mumer. So that affects in certain mitzvahs that does, like by making tefillin. But I don't know. That's a good shaila. That might still be a contemporary application of this shaila.
Yeah, but if it's a woman, they don't have to want to go.